Love, a message from the Ad Council.
Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King and we are here live today with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates, to take your phone calls and your financial questions at 715-845-2155. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Tom. Good morning, everybody. A little bit of a cloudy morning out there this morning, but it's always sunshiny, beautiful here in the studio.
I think the weather will be turning this week the way it sounds. They're even talking about some wet snow possibly by later in the week, so get out and enjoy these last few days of what could be a long, long winter, I suppose.
So fire up that bike, twist the throttle, folks. Go for a ride, and, well, you're probably not going to be doing too much tanning on the back of the bike this time of the year. But nonetheless, let the wind blow.
And, of course, what we're hearing in the last couple of weeks is it's going to be a long, long winter for the economy and the economic recovery because of all of these shenanigans being played in Washington, this game of chicken between the Tea Party Republicans in the House and the rest of the government. And we're coming up against the debt ceiling. We're coming up against the government shutdown entering its, what, third week now?
11th day now. Right?
Mm-hmm. So what's your take on this whole situation, and how do you think it's going to play out? Obviously, the president and John Boehner are finally talking a little bit this weekend, or the last couple of days, and maybe John Boehner is deciding it's time to fish or cut bait here. I mean, even some of the mainstream Republicans are basically distancing themselves from some of the more stringent tactics of, shall we say, the Tea Party right.
Sure.
Of the Republican Party. What do you think is going to shake out here?
Well, I think both sides are guilty as hell in this whole scenario. I really think that they do. I mean, you have Boehner saying, you know, we don't want to do anything until this is done. You have Obama on the other side saying, I'm not negotiating, talk about things. It's both of their jobs to negotiate to come into the middle. Simple as that. You know, I think that the opinions and the things that the Republicans are looking for are just as important, in my opinion, to be discussed as well as the hard line that the Democrats are putting through and say this has already been passed into law. I don't think our business as the people of America should be held up by Congress. Their job is to negotiate, not to to do it as they're behaving and acting. Now, what effect is it having inside of the economy? Well, really not much at this big point in time. 11 days isn't going to affect much. In fact, we had a number of great announcements coming up on several different companies this past week as far as further projections in the marketplace. Really, it's not going to have much of an effect on it, not in 11 days. We go on a month or two, now it's going to have an effect. Will we be able to see a blip or two inside of gross domestic product or some of this nature? Yeah, probably a little bit. Though it is adding volatility, and interestingly enough, there's a new volatility index that's up there that actually uses tweets. Is that a bird? Oh, no, that'd be Twitter, wouldn't it? Okay.
It would be Twitter, yeah.
That's using tweets, so rather than having a small sampling of 5,000, the sampling is going up to $70,000, saying, what do you think about the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ? And I've yet to come to a conclusion in my mind if the volatility that comes from tweets is simply because of people showing what their feelings are and have no idea what the different markets are. And the reason is because the Dow, and as I'm not going to this, I just know the numbers, the Dow volatility based upon this tweeting index is 84% thinks that it's just absolutely terrible and it's going to go into the decline. But yet if you go into S&P and the NASDAQ, they're both moderately bullish to bullish. I think that just means that the people who might be tweeting have no idea what all three of the markets are.
And I don't know if I want to base anything on Twitter responses. Yes, there's a lot of good stuff on Twitter, but there's also a lot of junk we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
And it just might be one of those.
You know,
my point in here is that what's happening with the sequester is, well, not so much the sequester anymore. I think that's actually fine. But with the debt ceiling and that whole bit that's coming up in the budget is that the shutdown is just simply making people uneasy versus having any real monetary effect at this particular point in time. All hats off to the federal workers that still have to work and are getting paid, but that's a whole other conversation.
It's an interesting conundrum here because you've got this debt ceiling crisis that is looming. You've got Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, saying it's going to be catastrophic. You've got some of the people on Wall Street saying it's going to be catastrophic. You've got the Republicans who have tied this to the president and his administration saying, it's not going to be, they want it both ways really because they're saying it's going to be horrible, blaming it on the president, and yet they're saying, hey, why not? Let's have the default. It's not going to be as catastrophic as everybody says it's going to be. We're going to be able to pay our bills. And yet it would be the first time in U.S. history that we would default on our obligations. I don't see how the how the government can allow this to happen.
Yeah, I think it's moronic for us to let us default. I also think it's moronic the way that they're behaving. And I'm Democrats, Republicans, President, all of them, in my opinion. I think it's moronic the way that they're behaving. But that's my opinion, and that's the beautiful part about this show, Tom, is we get to say what we want to.
There's an interesting story on MarketWatch today, a suggestion, if you will, talking about a way to handle this debt ceiling crisis. It's written by a guy named Anthony Mirhaderi, and he's the headline is "Why America Needs a Debt Default." Is it time to hit the reset button? And he is suggesting that the Fed, that they can do this, they can allow the debt ceiling to expire, and they can handle it without catastrophic occurrences by doing something called the Fed would do would be to trade their treasury bonds for equity. And apparently it was done back in the late 1830s and 1840s during Andrew Jackson's time, when the government and the economy was in bad shape because Jackson closed the National Bank and some other situations. But the suggestion being that the Fed can do some things to basically use this as a reset button and get rid of a lot of this, a lot of these problems that we have with the debt, and then Congress would have to go forward and make the spending cuts that are necessary to keep it from being run up again.
You know, this is my opinion, because obviously, folks, Tom just asked me this question as we were walking into the studio this morning. My response to that would be is that, you know, we might be able to reset what happens inside the United States, and there would be long-lasting and tremendous reverberations. I just made that word up. There'd be tremendous outlash or whatever, or long-term lasting effects if we did that. I think there would be. But my difference, I think, back in the time of President Jackson versus now is that we're such a larger global economy at this particular point in time. I think what would happen is this would reverb across the globe and cause a catastrophic global problem if we did this as America today. And we think about it, the rest of the world looks at the U.S. dollar as its riskless investment, the investment they know is going to be there every single day. And that's one of the reasons that nobody believed that Congress is going to take this past the 17th. The 17th, we lose our ability to borrow, we don't go broke. Folks, the tax dollars are still coming into the federal government. We can still continue to keep paying the bills. What happens is they believe we lose our taxing authority, our ability to continue to carry out the debt past the 17th. And so at that particular point in time, we have no authority to create more debt. I'm trying to remember the exact words again. So I think that, also as part of my argument in that is that, you know, the oil around the world is based upon U.S. dollar from a pricing standpoint. So the dollar is the measuring stick around the world, and if we collapse that measuring stick, I think it collapses around the world, and now everybody has to scramble and change. Do we go into the dark ages? I don't believe that'd be the case, but I think it's just the reverb that would go around the world will just be huge. So I don't think that we should necessarily do that. Now, I think at some particular point in time, our Congress, both parts, have got to just simply say enough is enough. We have to have some certain self-reliance on what we do. And Tom, you know, I thought at one point in time we were coming back to an era of self-reliance past back in the 30s or 40s where we took care of ourselves, but it appears to not be the case. It appears as though people are voting people in office who just want to take care of them rather than people taking care of themselves. And that's unfortunate. And I think it's happening that way on both sides of the aisle, unfortunately.
Well,
and so what happens is we get to pay for it. We, meaning everybody who's working and paying taxes.
We're going to disagree on some of that, but this is not the time or place for that conversation. We could talk about the big picture issues all day, but we want to take your questions about your financial situation, whether it be stocks and bonds, 401ks, your retirement, college, whatever the case may be. That's why we are here, to take your questions. 715-845-2155. Back in a moment. You're listening to Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch on WSAU.
Allegra asks, what good is tailgating if allergies keep you in the car? How much fun is a sniffly hayride? What if Oktoberfest just becomes a sneeze fest? All autumn, Allegra gives you power over outdoor and indoor allergies for a full 24 hours. It even works on ragweed, the number one cause of fall allergies. Only Allegra is both fast and non-drowsy. Allegra, stop suffering, start living.
Starts working in 1 hour among OTC branded antihistamines. Applies to first dose only. Uses directed. Visit Allegra.com.
Honey, what do you think of these?
Oh, I like.
Honey, how's dinner?
I like it.
Some things you like.
Oh, honey.
And some things you kind of, sort of.
How do you like my new short hair?
Maybe like.
I can't believe you.
Like us on Facebook. Click the blue F at WSAU.com.
Oh, now that's what I like.
Whatever.
On WSAU.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear hug.
Uh-huh, okay.
Well, we were building a bonfire, and I saw some, like, dry brush and leaves around, so, you know, I said to move the bonfire somewhere else, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear shows up and hugs me.
So you noticed some wildfire hazards, and moved your bonfire to a safer location.
Yeah,
that's Smokey, all right. He likes it when people help prevent wildfires. It hits him close to home. Not everybody gets the hug, my friend. So that's pretty special to get a hug from Smokey Bear.
So it was him. Hey, guys, I told you it was Smokey.
Okay, well, congratulations, my friend. And thanks for calling. There are many ways to prevent a wildfire. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Today might be the day I drop out of school. Today could be the last day I try. My parents alone can't stop me. My friends can't even stop me. But you might be able to.
With United Way, you could tutor me, be my mentor, or volunteer to just read with me. If someone had helped me earlier, I might not be struggling. And studies prove that kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. There are tons of ways people like you can help kids like me stay in school. And United Way is calling for you to be one of them. Because it takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between me becoming one or the other could be you. Make me a success. Not a statistic.
Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we are back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Taking your phone call, 715-845-2155. We both punched up a column that we saw on MarketWatch this morning from Mark Hulbert. An easy way to pick a winning stock. And what he talks about is something that we've talked about on this show many times and something that you're a big believer in, and that's looking at the profitability of a company and then using that as a benchmark going forward for a stock that's going to be successful.
Yeah, here's what's strange, Tom. Companies have to make money to have a stock price. Who knew? All right, I'll talk further on that, but I just wanted to see your expression on your face.
Not necessarily, right? I mean, there are numerous.
Well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't have to, but I mean, for the rest of us.
There were years that Amazon went years without making a profit, right?
Well, this is true, but they had also the financial backing to be able to withhold that storm.
Okay.
All companies will have times where they're not profitable, and you just simply have to have the ability to get through that unprofitable time so you remain profitable. It's the steps that you do at that particular point in time that make all the difference. We only have to look at GM. All they had to do was to go broke, and then they came back and they're doing well again. That was meant as tongue-in-cheek and humor. But, you know, when we look through, you know, folks, we hear it about it all the time in our industry, and certainly you've heard the hot stock tip from everybody else, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be fantastic. I can't tell you how many times I read an article early in my career or in college saying, geez, what a great idea. It's a fantastic idea. They can do this. They can do that. Oh, it's going to be incredible. And you go through and you buy that stock and, you know, nothing happens and nothing happens and nothing happens. 5 years later, their idea finally comes to market and it's fantastic. Well, usually when you read the article, it takes a long time to have that thing come to marketplace. But then it could be great. It could be absolutely fantastic. You know, an example of this would be yesterday I was reading an article So the article came through in the Wall Street Journal, and they're discussing in there how some scientists in England have now found out and how they believe they'll be able to cure Alzheimer's and dementia with nothing more than a pill. And they have it already done. It's been done inside of lab mice, and it works. It worked 100% without any residual, and all it is somehow some sort of an enzyme or something of this nature in saliva that corrects or fixes the protein that causes Alzheimer's and dementia. So that being said, they feel as though within a generation, of course, within 20 years, we'll have the ability for the pill to help correct these problems that have Alzheimer's, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it appears inside of the article, by the way, they couldn't reverse damage already done, but to be able to stop anything going forward. And it goes into the article and talking about, you know, this should also have long-lasting effects for people who have Parkinson's as well as multiple sclerosis. And I'm thinking, this is absolutely fantastic, but again, you look at this, and it's going to be years and years and years before this thing comes to fruit. So what do we do? Well, apparently maybe we just keep a journal. So we can't buy the stock today on this hunch or on this idea or what they can prove and thinking that we're going to make a ton of money in a year or 2 years. It doesn't work that way, folks. We have to look at, and our article with Mark Hulbert here this morning, is that we have to look at profitability. Now, we can look at sales. Sales will certainly give us a lot. And when we look on this program, quite honestly, when we look for something quick, when a client is asking us about a particular stock and what do we think about it, and we not only look at what the analysts are saying, because the analysts can say one thing, but one thing I'm going to look at are a couple of quick things. If I look at a stock or somebody says, what do you think of an idea, we want to look at what's happening with sales. Is sales going up or down? What's the cost of goods sold? Is it going up and down? What's the debt doing up and down? And what's the profit? I want to know what the bottom line profit is. Now, the bottom line profit is different than sales and cost of goods sold, because we could have rising sales, but if our cost of goods sold go up, we could have still no profit on the bottom line. Or if we've had to take on a bunch of debt to create those sales that we can't get to that bottom line, it doesn't help us, and that's the whole crux of this article.
So they're looking at gross profits instead of earnings.
We're looking at profits net. We also want to look at sales as an indicator. But how much are we putting inside of our pocket becomes the question. How much are we putting in our pocket? How much are we actually paying taxes on the bottom line? With that, when you have increasing profits, you have the ability to weather the storm, as we had talked about. If we have a couple of years where we're not making any money, we have the ability to weather the storm. We have the ability to pour money into research and development, and we have the profits, the money to do so, to return back to the stockholders. If we're not making any money in the bottom line, we can't do these various things, and we're going to have a stock long-term. If you're not making a profit, it's going to go down because, obviously, the company can't remain in business.
Well, when you look at that, and, whenever you look at a prospectus for anything, it always says, and the ads always say, past results are not indicative of future happenings.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking at these companies using this scenario in that way, that what happened in the past, what is happening now, portends what is going to happen in the future.
It all becomes a probability of what's likely to occur. You can't guarantee it by no means. There's no way to be able to guarantee anything. You know, if we take a look back about 20 years ago, Apple was literally on the ropes, just about done, just about broke. And so they said, well, let's bring back the visionary again. So they bring Steve Jobs back, and Steve Jobs comes with a couple of ideas, comes out with the iPod to begin with, and starts out with that whole thing and starts turning the company around right off the bat. But at that time, as soon as they became profitable, people would say, well, geez, here's a company that's innovative, profitable. They might have some great ideas come in the future, in which they certainly did. And one of the issues we've seen Apple, for example, come down so much over the course of the last several months, you know, back and forth, is because people are saying, well, do they have that ability to keep creating profit at the same pace that they have? Well, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep profit at the same pace that they've had, but certainly I think they'll be able to continue to keep profit. And with that profit going forward, they still are a viable stock in which to own. You know, we have to look at this. Let's take a look at it from a philosophical standpoint, and this might help us. You know, some people say, and as a matter of fact, there was an article that was out there that says you have to watch the price margins on stock because it's ruining America. Well, no, profit is good. Being greedy is bad, but profit is good. If we don't have any profit, we can't continue to move forward. So what would happen if all the companies in America stopped making profit? Well, then the industry would stop. We can't continue on in that type of a fashion. Only the government gets to create more debt. I just had to throw that in there. So we have to continue to remain profit. So the question is on the bottom line, who's expanding that profit? Some places to look at are dividends. You know, dividend stocks have been so popular over the course of the last several years, and rightfully so, because in order to have an ongoing dividend or to be able to increase that dividend, you have to be able to make profit. And so profit is the thing you have to look at. Are they making any money? Or the question becomes is, will they make any money in the short-term future because of something they're doing? You know, if you have a stock, as you said, Apple, but there's thousands of companies you could use, that were profitable, went unprofitable for a certain period of time. Is the probability that they're going to become profitable again becomes the question. And sometimes that's where you have the ability to buy a stock and a value of the stock is lower than what it should be. But going forward, it's going to do well and it's going to be a good quality stock to own.
It just seems to me that this is so obvious that if it was this easy, everybody would do it this way. You have to look or bet on what's going to happen in the future. Wayne Gretzky, one of the greatest hockey players, if not the greatest hockey player of all time, the experts analyzed why he was so good at what he did, and the suggestion was that Wayne Gretzky didn't see the puck where it was. He saw the puck where it was going to be.
Sure.
And that set him apart from other hockey players.
Yeah.
He could anticipate what was going to happen in the future. Don't you have to do that in order to be successful in investing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm trying to think of a company that's just stunk for a long time. Well, I'm looking at the back of a Dell monitor.
Think about that for a minute. We're going to take a break for some news. You can expound on that when we return here.
Very good.
News on the way. We'll be back with more. Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, back in a moment here on WSAU.
He worked out early, practiced late, and studied well into the night. The next day, he did it all over again.
She missed time hanging out and socializing with friends so she could make it on time to practices and games.
He became a top student and a confident leader, even as he helped his team win back-to-back conference titles.
She became a role model in her community, even as she led her team to an undefeated season.
And when they finished playing high school sports, what did they do next?
She graduated from college with honors and went to work for a successful company.
He attended graduate school and became a difference maker in his community.
Because that's what student athletes in Wisconsin do. They use the skills they develop playing high school sports today
to do even bigger things in life tomorrow.
High school sports.
A winning part of a complete education.
This message presented by the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. There have been phone calls and face-to-face discussions in Washington, but a deal to end the federal government shutdown remains elusive. White House spokesman Jay Carney confirmed that President Obama and GOP House Speaker John Boehner spoke by phone and called it a constructive conversation. The president met with Senate Republicans at the White House yesterday to discuss possible solutions to the stalemate. The two-year-old son of NFL star Adrian Peterson is dead. Authorities in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, have charged 27-year-old Joseph Patterson with aggravated felony assault and battery of an infant. The suspect is identified as the boyfriend of the child's mother. Wausau is beginning phase one of redeveloping another downtown segment along the Wisconsin River. The project announced yesterday starts with environmental remediation on about 7 acres between the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin and the Bridge Street Bridge. The work starts Monday and includes removing a storm sewer and reestablishing a natural creek. Work on the crippled Leo Frigo Bridge in Green Bay is scheduled to begin on Monday. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation says construction crews will build two truss towers under the deck of Pier 22 to stabilize the bridge. In sports, the Cardinals take Game 1 of the National League Championship Series. They beat the Dodgers 3-2 last night. The American League Championship Series begins tonight with Boston taking on Detroit. The United States scored two late goals to beat Jamaica 2-0 in a World Cup qualifying matchup. Also, the Badger football team back at it today taking on Northwestern. You can hear the game right here, pregame show at 12:30. You can also check out the entire high school scoreboard on our website at WSAU.com. The weather today, cloudy with a chance of a few showers later on and a high of 64. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 40. Sunday, mostly sunny and seasonal with a high of 59. Monday, partly cloudy, a chance of a shower late, high 58. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less, eat slower, eat smarter, eat your fruits and veggies, stop eating before you're full, up your fiber, lower your calories, get off the bus early, do some gardening, do jumping jacks, take the stairs, take one, not two, take on a new sport, take a long walk home, walk instead of drive, bend, stretch, reach for the stars, climb the monkey bars, skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
This fall, every Badgers football fan is dreaming of roses. This Saturday, follow the Wisconsin Badgers on their march to the Rose Bowl on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Saturday, it's the Badgers and Northwestern. Game coverage at 12:30, kickoff at 2:30 on WSAU.
We're back in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau.
The opinions voiced on this show are for general information only, not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through HBEC Incorporated. Member FINRA, SIPC, HBEC Incorporated, and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. The folks this show is meant for Wisconsin residents only.
All right, we were talking before the break about looking forward and how we use current information about companies that are making a profit, but how you can't just rely on that totally. You need to have a little bit of forward thinking about
some foresight
about what companies are going to be doing down the road, and you were going to give us some examples of how that might work.
You know, I was riding motorcycles with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and she has a hard time in her corners on a motorcycle. And I made this statement to her, and I kind of smiled because I said, that makes it's like a pretty good life statement. And, folks, if you've ever ridden a motorcycle, if you look down on the ground, you're going to crash. You have to be able to look out, especially in a corner, because if you look down on the ground, you're going to go wherever your eyes are looking. So you have to go out into the corner, and you have to look out past the corner where you're going, and your body will naturally take you right around the corner to the way you're supposed to go, with the exception of obvious stuff if you're going too fast. Well, the same thing is in America, as in life, in my opinion, is if you're looking down, it's not going to do any good. You have to look forward. And here's the example I use on this, or I'll use on this, and that is I'm looking at the back of a Dell monitor right now. You know, Dell was fantastic. I've owned probably 7 or 8 Dell computers in my life and still have one floating around my office, though it's not plugged in, but I still have one in there.
Dude, you could have got a Dell.
Exactly. See, I mean, they had that, you know, that type of an appeal. You know, when Dell first came out, you had Mr. Dell, is it Mark Dell, I believe his first name is?
Mike
Dell, okay. You know, he's got the future saying everybody's going to want PCs, you know, he hooks up with Microsoft, they put them together. You have Apple that says, geez, everybody would like a computer. And you know what? And they were right. I mean, computers are part of our lives. But somewhere along the way, Steve Jobs had the ability to say, geez, I really like the idea of having this small computer inside of my hand, touchscreen, et cetera, comes up with the iPad. And as of that instant when the iPad came out and started playing around with it and I got mine for the first time, I looked at it and I said, laptops are done. I mean, who really wants a laptop now when it's the portability that you want with a laptop? And now you have an iPad sitting here. It's done. Now, at the same time, I look at my iPad right now, which I absolutely love, don't get me wrong, but I wish it had a USB dock in it where I could save a document to it and plug it and print it someplace. Though you can do it wirelessly, it's not as portable to be able to transfer files unless you're using emails. So I wish it had that. And it's small enough, and you can do it small enough now that they could probably even put a CD or a microchip in there for transferring files. And I thought that would have been a really good idea. Well, what happened then is what happens with Dell. Dell goes from a computer manufacturer standpoint, just stock goes down like crazy. HP starts having problems where they were doing a ton of computers. There's a whole bunch of small manufacturers' computers that are just gone entirely because so many people are just not buying laptops anymore. They're going to a pad. So finally, about a year ago now, Microsoft finally got it and said, hey, we're going to come out with a pad that has some of the stuff, a USB port, and it's going to have some chips on the inside of it and operate where you can do more business types of platforms for that if you're going to construct a letter or need a spreadsheet and so forth using some of the Microsoft products. And they came out with that idea, and it's still going. I don't know if it's reaching any sort of a fevered pitch by any means, but it's still continuing on. So with this, you have to have that foresight. And you can look at it in Dell and look at the iPad and go, this iPad is fantastic, and play with the stuff and say, this is going to be a great idea. And so whole industries have to have that ability to see. Well, if you're looking around at companies, which is our original discussion is, you have to look at it and say, if we're going to look forward with this company, what are they going to do? So we have to look at the profitability. Are they making money today? If they're not making money today, is their product or service so good that it's going to have wide appeal and it's going to make that stock price go up and become larger, et cetera, et cetera? We have to look around at the economy, what's happening inside of an economic conditions. Are we having an expansive or contractive type of an economy at this particular point in time? And will that stock or this group of stocks be some of those that are going to benefit or come down as a result of this economy? So we have to look at all that stuff. And the unfortunate part is, Tom, is asking the question, is says, you know, how come people don't do this, or why don't we look at that sort of stuff? And the reason is because it takes some time to do that. I think everybody's differentially gifted. I can't play a bleeding video game to save my can. I just can't play them. And I don't know if you play video games or you get in there, but I can't do it. I know how they're constructed and what makes the programs work, and I know how they make the pixel go in that particular spot to make the colors. I know how that stuff works from a programming standpoint. But I can't play a game, as where my son just floors me every time I play football with him or some of these games. He just kills me every time.
Yeah.
And he gets great enjoyment out of this, by the way. But you know, at the same time, for one reason or another, this just makes sense to me from a stock standpoint or an investment standpoint. It makes sense to me, logic and how all this sort of stuff works. I don't know why, but I do. So when I look at things, I look at this stuff naturally. It doesn't happen typically for most people. People just hop online and say, well, what do other people think? What's the idea, or what's the great stock tip I'm getting from my brother-in-law? And it's got to be more than that. That's where you get Peter Lynch, who comes back and says, only buy stocks of things and products and services that you know and use, because, again, it's something we have the chance to look at, touch, play with, and see, and is this a product or service or something I'd like to do?
What about looking, because there's another article on MarketWatch called Four Stocks Warren Buffett and Smart Money Love. What about just watching where the smart money is putting their money and following that?
That's not a bad idea by any means. You look at it because they're already doing the work and the research. But it's not going to be a quick fix. It's going to be a long-term stock. Remember, Warren Buffett buys stuff that he thinks is going to be good in 5 and 10 years. Now, how's that for foresight? How old is Warren Buffett? 80-something. And he's still buying for the long term. We have to look in that same type of mentality.
One of the companies on this list that the smart money is looking at these days is Eastman Kodak. Mm-hmm. There's a company that everybody thought was dead. They're in bankruptcy. They're coming out of bankruptcy now, and there is some smart money and some hedge funds that is looking at Eastman Kodak as a company that can make a rebound.
Perhaps they could. I haven't read the article, and I don't know why. The question has been with Eastman Kodak because they still have a lot of patents that are out there, and is the ability simply for them to be able to use their patents and move forward. So, you know, not a bad plan or idea by any means. We just have to see what they can look at going forward, of course.
Do you think as an investment, just as an investment neophyte, as someone who's doesn't have a whole lot of money to play with but is looking at a situation, do you think you could do all right by, as you mentioned, only investing in companies and products that you yourself use?
I don't think it's a bad place to start. Now, products, you know, if I look around my house, things I like, well...
I eat Kraft macaroni and cheese, so I think Kraft's a good stock. I drink Coca-Cola, I'm going to look at Coke instead of the others. I eat Fritos, whatever the case may
right.
be. I drive a Honda or whatever car you drive.
Well, so now let's look at this. Okay, so we take a look at Coca-Cola. Okay, who owns Coca-Cola? Well, Warren Buffett. Why? Because he thinks it's got a long-term worldwide global prospects of being able to sell their beverages and their water and so forth across around the world. So that's a great idea. Okay, so let's take a look at this stock now. Let's look at the profitability of it. Is it making money? What's it doing long-term? So all that next question comes in the middle of there. You look at your car, and it's Jaguar. That's Tom's car, by the way, folks.
Yeah.
We look at it and say, okay, Jaguar was doing a pretty good job around the world in England, but they could never hold up any values because it has those quality issues. Well, now it's owned by a firm from India, and it appears as though they're picking that stuff up, and the designs are just stellar these days, you know. And so how's their stock doing? Well, we're going to wait to see what happens with the quality. So now you got it. Now you're thinking about, okay, what do we look at from a cop or from a cop, from a stock? What are we looking at from a stock to be able to propel us forward and looking at good quality stocks? But now you're hitting on the questions we have to take a look at. You know, your car you can look at. You can look at your clothing, Tom. And I know that Tom wears a lot of Abercrombie and Fitch here in the office.
And, stop it.
But they got, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch, tremendous profit, you know, for example. So those are the stuff you're looking at when you want to buy an individual stock.
My my father-in-law worked for Frito-Lay for many years, and he would always get very upset when I would buy the cheaper chips on sale. You know, I'd come home with bags of Old Dutch or Jays, and he'd go, what are you doing? we have stock in Frito-Lay. You need to buy Frito-Lay products. So,
but would he buy Ford because you had Ford stock, Ford cars?
Let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hi, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Morning, Bill.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'd like to get into stocks, but I'm thinking transportation stock.
Okay.
Canadian National is one I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've noticed the stock right now, it's like 106. But the low I've seen was 95, and it always seems to come back after it drops.
You're talking railroads now.
Yes.
Didn't Warren Buffett get heavily into railroads?
Oh yeah, he bought
ago?
Santa Fe and Burlington Northern.
Yep. There's a lot of great railroad stocks that are out there, and I still think railroad stocks are a fantastic idea. By the way.
Yeah.
Now, what I would do is if you're looking at ones, for example, Canadian National, look at all of them. Okay.
Well, CSX and all of that.
Let's take a look at all of them and say, okay, is there one or two of these that we think are pretty good? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll look at in Canadian National. Okay. So they're channeling. They're going back and forth between 95 and, what did you say, 106?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know the stock off the top of my head by any means, but okay, if it's going from 95 to 106, that's good. We can channel it. But I prefer to have the one I can buy at 95 and it goes to 106, maybe it comes back to 105, but then it goes up to 110. Then maybe it comes back to 100, then maybe it goes to 115. You got my point?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the expansion, and the expansion on that is going to be not only from sales growth, but it's going to be from the bottom line profitability becoming better. And so now I want to take a look at it and say, okay, let's go in, and you can do this on the Internet today. It's beautiful with this, Bill. You can go through and say, let's take a look at all the railroad stocks and start taking a look at some of the profitability and what's happening with them. And a really cool thing about MarketWatch.com, which is one of the programs that we use on a weekly basis here in this program, is they actually now have made it so that it's actually bar charted for profitability and sales and so forth, and they make it a real nice little easy format if you look at an individual stock. And I think this is a fantastic piece of equipment or information for all of us who are out here trying to make our way in the investment world. With that being the case, MarketWatch.com just does a great job at that, and it's free. We can look at it for nothing, folks, online to see if that individual stock, as a matter of fact, it'll give us the information on mutual funds and all other types of stuff, too. But that's what I would take a look at. If it's channeling back and forth in a stock, I'm looking at it thinking, okay, you can trade it a little bit if you want to, but I'd rather have the one I can kind of set it and forget it and just watch what happens in the news for it and just come back and look at it in 5 years or 10 years, and hopefully it's come up greater in value.
Okay.
It's betting if you're doing it within 1 year. It's investing if you're doing it for three or five, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. We're going to take a quick break here and come back with more. We're talking to Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Realtors have expertise in land development and management, retail, industrial, office, and investment properties. They have the experience, knowledge, and savvy to help you achieve your business and investment real estate goals. Realtors also have the power of the National Association of Realtors behind them, working with legislators and regulators to support the key role commercial real estate plays in our national economy. Ask for a professional who understands your commercial business. Ask for a Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Providing the play-by-play.
Now, you see this wet stuff right down over here. If you come right back up here, you'll see these clouds.
Without the aid of a telestrator.
Now, they ran right through this. Oh, boy. Looks like I kind of drew a phallic-shaped thing here. Can we get this cleared off?
WSAU.
Guys.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates. Before we move on, going back to the caller's question about railroad and transportation stocks, I would imagine there are transportation mutual funds that he could look at as well that would cover all of his bases?
Absolutely, all over the place, and that's a pretty good plan there, Tom. Bill, if you're listening, there are actually mutual funds that will cover transportation. So they'll not only cover the railroads, but they'll cover transportation as far as shipping and other areas. And the mass shipping is where a lot of money is being saved. You know, railroad can do this stuff a lot cheaper than trucks can. As a result of that, railroads continue to keep doing better for the moving of goods. And I'm trying to remember, there's even a thing they see on TV, what, 1 gallon, 450 miles for a ton of material or something of the
same. Yeah,
century.
That's an ad by the railroad industry.
For the railroad industry. But it is cheap comparatively, yeah. And they haul so many hundreds of thousands of tons at a shot.
All right, let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Yeah, this is Richard.
Richard, go ahead.
Morning, Richard.
Good morning. See, I have a stock that I've a short-term gain. I'm trying to create long-term. I heard you can sell, or how would I handle that if I would need another, say, 3 months?
Well, there's a real easy thing you could do, and if you have a pen handy, I suggest write this bugger down, okay?
Okay, got it.
All right, it's called shorting against the box.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally the term. And your financial advisor will know exactly what that means. And it's not like a hip-hop term where you can put it into a rap music or something like that. Shorting against the box, and let's say, you don't have to tell me the stock, but let's say you have 100 stock of XYZ, okay? You have 100 shares, and you bought it, and it's a short-term gain, and you're happy about it, but you're afraid that you don't want to have it go down because you want to turn it into long-term gains. You got to get over 12 months. So what you can do is you can buy a short position for 100 shares, and it'll lock up your gain as of the day that you buy it. It'll lock up that gain. You can't make any more or lose any more. So if the stock goes down, you'll make money in the short position. If the stock goes up, you'll lose money in the short position. So the profit you have today is what you'll lock in. And you just simply hold that position then until your 1 year is up and you close out both positions and your profit's locked in for the long-term gain versus short-term.
What might be the cost of something like that? Say that you got about a $10,000 or $20,000 investment.
Well, it depends upon which advisor or broker you're using. Probably anywhere between $50 to $150.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, because it's essentially a stock purchase except in reverse.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. What are any risks involved in doing something like that?
Zero. The risks are actually taken out when you short against the box, and now I'm probably going to have compliance say, well, there are risks involved, and there, mathematically there is not.
Well, why wouldn't everybody do that then if they
because
have
it also means no profit. So let's say if you bought 100 shares and you sold 100 shares at the same time, you can't have any profit, you can't have any loss. The difference in here is Richard was saying he bought a stock, and Richard, I'm making up a number here. I know this isn't your stock, but let's say Richard bought the shares at $10 a share, and throughout this great year, he's now sitting at $20 a share, so he has 100% profit. Well, if he sells it now, he's going to have the short-term capital gain, which is going to be ordinary income.
Oh, so he's basically doing this for a tax purposes.
Correct. So if he just simply waits until after 12 months, but he wants to lock in his gain at that doubling his price, he takes a short position, he locks in the gain. So there's no risk of losing money now after he has both positions. The risk, I suppose, would be is that when you close the positions out, there could be a little fluctuation in price. Or, he still has the commission and fees and taxes to pay on this. But shorting against the box is probably one of the oldest and simplest hedging techniques to be able to lock in profit, and it will take the volatility out of his portfolio because wherever he has a plus one, he'll have a minus one to offset it in that stock price. So it's the oldest hedging
technique. Who was the first guy to come up with that?
I think his name was Shorting. against the box? I don't know.
All right. 715-845-2155. We're almost out of time here in the few minutes we have left. What did you want to touch on? Anything at all that's on your mind over there?
Well, I have here, and I think it's kind of interesting, because we were talking about profitability, you know, gross sales, et cetera, and taxes is part of that. And there's a just a fun little article that popped up, and it talked about the cheapest states in which to live. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to go down this list. Interestingly enough, in the article, I'm kind of smiling and laughing because they say the top Did they say the top ten states? I thought it said the top ten states, and there's only seven listed. But for fun, there we go. But there's a few states in here we don't think about, and one of them is Washington State, not D.C., but Washington State. Washington State, number seven on the list. They have no individual income tax, no taxes on Social Security or pension income, which is a pretty good consistency. The only thing is that we get have a lot of rain.
Right.
Okay.
You
next,
take the money you save and invest in raincoats and, you know.
Yep. Florida would be number six on this list of seven, of ten or
no
so.
No income tax.
No income taxes, as well as no individual tax on Social Security or pension income. Of course, you pay for it in different types of other taxes, and consumption tax, use taxes, license, et cetera, et cetera. Number five on the list is Texas.
Alligators and snakes. Alligators, snakes, and sinkholes. So,
and they
taste
great. Sinkholes are a little nervous. You can't really do much about those unless you need a pool in the backyard. Maybe get a little help out with that, you know, with the sinkhole. Texas, interestingly enough, half of the new jobs created in America in the last 12 months have been created inside of Texas. In Texas, no individual income tax, but property taxes and sales taxes can tend to get you a little bit. Remember, each state still has to pay for its way. Wyoming, no individual income tax, Social Security, nothing on pensions. There's no easy way to pay anything, or not a lot of taxes, not a lot of property taxes. Sales taxes tend to be a little bit higher than the national average. But Wyoming, like number three on this list, you get paid with by the beauty.
The scenery, yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You may not have a job, but it'll look good wherever you live. Okay. So number three on the list, South Dakota, a place I actually enjoy a great deal. South Dakota, beautiful place, of course. No income tax on income, of course, Social Security and or pensions, and the overall tax burden is one of the lowest in the nation in South Dakota. Now, the difference is, again, you need to have a job, and that's the difficult part. So maybe you can work for 2 weeks out of the year in Sturgis, Tom, doing something there when the rally comes up and make enough for the rest of the year.
Mm.
Doesn't sound like a bad plan to me. Number two, Nevada, of course, as we know, many retirees, as I'm reading in the article, rely on income from several sources, and Nevada, of course, has no taxation on state income tax. Social Security or pension income is not there. Sales tax is relatively lower because, of course, all the gambling comes in.
Right.
And you can go bet a couple of nickels together and see if you make some winnings to help increase your income.
Sure.
How does that work out for you?
I wouldn't use it as a investment strategy.
And number one on this, and many people look at it and go, what, huh, is Alaska. Alaska, of course, has got pretty inexpensive living, low taxes across the way, and, of course, they have oil and gas, but, again, you're being paid in scenery, and I hear that the winters are a little bit of a bear to shovel the snow out.
Food costs as well in Alaska.
Well,
right?
I think you're probably right.
For certain stuff.
Unless you like seafood, yeah, and moose.
That's right, but I think chicken and turkey cost a lot up in Alaska.
Well, it's that's because the grizzlies eat them.
All right. Well, we're out of time for today, but if folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
Folks, we will be in the lovely Wausau on 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street. Stop on in for a cup of coffee. See if you can catch us in between appointments, and we'll say hello and hi. Or give us a call, 715-849-3600 inside of the Wausau area. Outside of Wausau at 866-355-5100, or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you again next week.
We'll see you then, brother.
Hey, coming up, we've got the news at 9 o'clock. That'll be followed by the polka shows and, of course, a Badger doubleheader for you today. The Badger football team coming back from their bye week. They take on Northwestern at Camp Randall. And you can hear the game right here. Matt LePay, Mike Lucas on the call. Pregame show at 12:30. The kick set for 2:30 this afternoon. And then tonight, the Badger hockey team back in action. Mike Eaves' crew won last night over Northern Michigan. Their first win in the regular season opener since 2008. They'll try again tonight against Northern Michigan again at the Kohl Center in Madison. We'll have that for you pregame show at 6:30. It's all right here on WSAU.
News.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. There are competing ideas in Congress about reopening the government and raising the debt ceiling by the Treasury Department's deadline on Thursday, but there is talking going on, which is new.
As talks between Republicans and Democrats continue behind closed doors, Congress meets for another Saturday session. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid calling a vote on legislation extending the debt limit through the end of next year.
Giving the economy certainty and stability over the long term.
The procedural vote is unlikely to win a necessary 60 votes.
The rest of us actually want to enact some common sense reform.